Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Speaking of quick hits, which we have coming up at 2:40 today, wink, wink.
You want to call some unserious people? We can do all the hits.
I can do like 15 seconds of a lot of people. Most of them were from 30 years ago, though.
If your hands are clean, it's only because the dirty places that you go to do manicures. Like, do the Brian Coxes.
No.
Be secession for
but
me,
see,
please.
My
he doesn't
Brian
say dirty
Cox,
places, by the way. This is something I can't say on the air.
My Brian Cox is just Brian Cox from Super Troopers.
Okay.
That's just, I mean, it's, which, by the way, is just a nicer version of Logan Roy. With respect to Brian Cox.
He's come a long way, hasn't he?
Yes.
Yes, he's come a long way.
That accent changed 5% for those characters, but he's fantastic. And now I don't want to get on the wrong side of Brian Cox here. He's clearly listening, but 13-0, baby.
You did it.
Yeah.
I say you did it with a complete emphasis. You did it.
I mean, I like to think that I've willed this team to where they are today, and then Donovan helped as well.
I like to think that Tristan Thompson would not be able to post out the 13 on the back of his jersey and the dash O, emulating Darius Garland, doing the number 10 and doing the 10-0, if not for your inspiration.
I would like to think that this is all on me, but no, Donovan Mitchell was pretty good last night. Can we just point to the fact that, Donovan's numbers, specific scoring numbers, just the surface level aren't as good as they've been in the first couple years here. And so I don't think it's a coincidence that other people might be having a little bit better numbers. But then he goes and does what he does last night and reminds everybody that, yeah, they're sharing the workload here. But, yeah, this is Donovan Mitchell's team. That's what last night was the reminder of.
Yeah, and I kind of wondered at what point we would start to see more and more of this. Because last year we'd see so many games where it just felt like JB was like, all right, Donovan, go out there, win the game, do the thing. And this year the theme of it, Nick, had been the exact opposite. It had been, all right, here's the game Darius wins. Here's the game Evan wins. Here's the game. And it just kind of, it was a who's who. It was a dealer's choice any given night. And in recent games, it feels like we've gone back to the idea that in the NBA, most teams, you got one superstar. In today's NBA, the super team era is gone. You got one superstar in most teams, and Donovan is reminding everybody who that superstar is.
Well, and I think, you know why that matters? Because he's not having to spend the other three quarters doing it. Like, I think there is, like, a simple thing of, like, diminishing returns. If Donovan has to be Donovan for four quarters, it's really hard, especially, I mean, for anybody, but especially for an undersized combo guard, to do that for four quarters while also doing all the little things. Because Donovan didn't just take over the game with scoring last night. He was doing a lot of the other things that led to that Cavaliers win.
Yeah, nearly had a triple-double.
And so, like, what I think is interesting is, you know, I think Donovan's just going to have games where it's like, all right, this team is got their feet in the mud a little bit. I'm going to have to just go over and take over the game completely. But when it only has to be the fourth quarter, he can kind of keep things in reserve for that moment. But I think what'll be really interesting, and the real test of time, is as the next 69 games go on, can you continue to keep Darius as one of your closers? Because I think when we get into the playoffs, I know that there are a lot of superficial conversations we all have about how different the playoffs are.
Yeah.
But
and Darius can be Exhibit A in that in many regard. I know we called it a season from hell, but last year, Darius in Game 7 against Orlando was absolutely atrocious.
Well, and I think, you know, when we start to examine the Cavs' upside, truly in the playoffs, the regular season and playoff upsides are two very different things. But yeah, Darius and Evan and Donovan all taken over games. Even Jared has taken over second half of a game before the season. Yeah, that really, really helps you in the regular season. But those habits of not just having to look at Donovan and go, you're going to close this thing out, I think that's crucial to surprising people in the NBA. Like, I think having Donovan be the guy, okay, yeah, you're the closer. Oh, but by the way, we're going to go to Darius as well.
Yeah, because it felt like, remember at times last year we got on JB early on in the season because in end of games, he wasn't just getting the ball to Donovan and letting Donovan be the superstar in that moment.
Yeah.
And then it seemed like he got the memo. It seemed like he got the memo and then he kind of went a little too hard in the paint with that and was constantly going to Donovan. I guess I got to ask you, what balance are you looking for here? It seems like you want a surprise attack.
I think that makes you lethal in the playoffs.
For sure. I mean, anytime you got more options than not. Like right now, it feels like the Cavs have an ace up their sleeve. That's Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
You have that. That's there. That's always going to be a good card to play. Can you get to a spot where Darius is something that you can use late in games and have it matter?
I think it will. I actually think the wild card is Evan.
Okay.
Like, I'm pretty confident that, like, this isn't, I know why everybody's saying it. I don't think it's a fluke that Darius has taken over games at the end of the game and doing what he's doing. I don't think it is. I just think it's a fluke we haven't seen in the playoffs yet. I think specific to last year, I think that's more fluky.
Let me put it this way. The Boston game coming up in a little bit. We're putting a lot of heat on it. We're putting a lot of weight on it. It's a regular season game on Tuesday.
Yep.
And I heard hours of
most
discussion
important game ever.
About whether or not on a Thursday.
Yep.
What is that? That's a lot of days in between here.
Should we put all the eggs in the basket on the Boston game or go 24-0? 216-474-0092.
On a regular season game, 4 days away still, but that's fine. At the end of that game, if it goes to anybody but Donovan, are you going to get mad at Kenny Atkinson?
No. And by the way, that might actually take a little bit of patience because one day he's going to go to the wrong guy at the wrong time or the right guy who just didn't get the job done. And that's okay.
Okay, because we didn't make it okay with JB often early on.
Well, yeah, because I think at some point, I think there were a lot of things that went into that. I think so much of my confidence that Darius can still be the closer or one of your two closers, not just now, but throughout the rest of the season and the postseason, one, are he's ridiculously talented, and I still feel like I feel like every day I get stronger with the idea that last year was the anomaly. The other thing is, I think the offense is allowing this. And like in a way, the bench has been the fulcrum to get back into some of these games. Like the bench helped you last night in the third quarter. Obviously, I'm trying to think, was it the Nets game? What was the game?
Yeah, the Nets game was the one that they had the five-man lineup with none of the core four in there. They erased the 19-9 deficit.
Yeah, and I think so. Okay, that's a really useful tool to use, but that's because of the offense. That's because of the way this thing is set up.
Excuse me, they went on the 19-9 run.
I feel like the same thing with Darius and Donovan, because the thing that got into the killing the ball and it became hero ball was the ball wasn't moving. The ball was still moving last night.
Yeah, ball's moving a lot right now in this offense.
And it's moving with Donovan still somehow getting those touches to take over the game. So it's not just ugly ISO ball, dribbling the ball into the court, all the kind of things that sometimes come with either Donovan or Darius. And I think that's really exciting. I think Donovan as your class A, if you will, I'm just going to make a really lazy comparison, and Darius is your Cade Smith of like, it's not Donovan's night? Cool. I think that's really, really powerful. And I think that is part of that upside we just haven't seen yet with this team. And I think last night was a reminder, yep, it's Donovan's team. And there's going to be another moment where, hey, it's also Darius's team. But I think I think it's a really important line to walk, and I think that's the importance of coaches.
I mean, you got four guys that are all making $200 million deals. I mean, it should be looked at as a collection of awesome NBA players. But for some reason, it's still just... It deviates back to what today's NBA is, which is, again, the super team is gone. It's now who's your superstar, and then how do you supplement that? Are the Cavs able to almost zig when the rest of the league is zagging is the question I would have for you. Because think about it. Like, in with the 76ers, Embiid is the star, and then you're putting all the other pieces around him. As much as we like Maxey and George, you're putting the other pieces around him. With the Knicks, you're putting the other pieces around Brunson. Like, it's still, at the end of the day, you still know who it goes through. Even with the Bucks. You have Dame there, but it's still going through Giannis.
Yeah, but I think that's an oversimplification. Like, most times it goes through Giannis, and then you can play the Dame card if you need to, but if you want to. Like in New York, yeah, it's Jalen Brunson. I think the problem with Julius is maybe the feeling with Julius Randle is he couldn't do that enough. So then he go out and trade Julius Randle for Karl-Anthony Towns, and we'll find out if Karl-Anthony Towns can do that. I mean, even in Golden State, like, yeah, Steph was the killer, and then Steph and KD were the killer. How many times did Klay Thompson take over games?
That's back in the super team era. There, that like you can see the NBA is shifting away from. Are we trying to build what is essentially a mini super team, just not with the names that you'd associate typically with it?
I think super teams now are two-star teams. And I think as of right now, it's changed. You're a two-star team. And that's where Evan eventually being able to close out games by taking over games becomes really important. I don't know if you can do that this year because I think it takes time for that, right? People call it the dog mentality. That's a lazy kind of nomenclature for it. I think some of it is just being coached up and
they just like saying dog mentality too. It is kind of
really,
fun.
I like saying nomenclature.
I like putting out gifts of having the heart, or like the whole body, and then it's actually just a dog where the heart is.
Yeah.
That's what I like.
That's because that's you and
me. Got that dog in him.
Yeah, that's people always say, Nick and JP, they got that dog in them. We got quick hits coming up at 2:40 today. We also have Brian Baldinger at 3:20, Baldy, Odyssey NFL Insider. We'll get his thoughts on the talent conundrum that we've been talking about for a couple days now. Pete Futek, College Football News, joining us at 4. We got the narrative. I feel like I got to set that up better. But with Jonathan at 6:20, in case we missed it at the end of the show. Oh, we've got so much to get to. But 216-474-0092, at Nick Wilson says, at Jay Peterlin on social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Is Donovan Mitchell still your dedicated closer? Or is last night... kind, I don't want to say the anomaly, but is last night going to be one of three different closers for your team? Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, and sometimes Evan Mobley. We'll get into that. And Shaquille O'Neal weighed in on how much credit Kenny Atkinson deserves. That's next on 92.3 The Fan. Nick Wilson, Jonathan Peterlin back on Afternoon Drive. We do have quick hits coming up in just about 20 minutes' time. We also have Brian Baldinger coming up at 3:20. We'll get his thoughts on how much of the Browns' struggles this year are talent issues. But we're talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers' 13th win of the season. To start the season, I can't even remember. I can't keep up with what the latest record is on how many of these.
That is nice that it's undefeated, though, so you can it's easy to remember that one, 13-0.
Yeah, I think we'll take that one. But
I think that's the sixth best record all time?
Yes. That is exactly what it is. Now, because for some reason I thought yesterday going into the show was sixth best, and then the numbers are just starting to confuse me at some point.
Yeah, well, about winning, it gets confusing sometimes. Yeah, I get it.
Guys, I'm winning so much here. I'm just, it's almost overwhelming. I mean, you'd almost wish for a loss. No, you wouldn't. But last night on Inside the NBA, on NBA on TNT, Shaq weighed in on how much credit Kenny Atkinson deserves in the Cavs' red-hot start.
First of all, I want to give Kenny Atkinson some love in Cleveland. Man, he's doing a fabulous job. Those guys
ain't doing nothing.
Well.
Donovan Mitchell is playing.
That's disrespectful.
Come on. That's so funny, though.
That is. I mean, it is. But so what I hate about it is it gives in to this narrative. And it's a total – I think it's just another way of players to try and to claim the league. This narrative that players have no say over that coaches have no say or input, and it's just player led, and it's like, that's just not entirely true. And that the idea that Shaq does this when, like, look at Shaq's career with Brian Hill, and then look at it with Phil Jackson, and then look at it with Stan Van Gundy,
and then Spoelstra,
and then look at it with a guy named Pat Riley, and just tell me that a head coach doesn't matter. And you know, I am the ultimate Shaq guy. I'm not even like the ultimate Kenny Atkinson guy. I'm just offended on behalf of Kenny Atkinson.
Yeah, I was curious to see how you do this because I think Shaq is one of your favorite players all time.
So I know.
I didn't know if you'd just go and drop the hammer on him or what you'd end up doing there. I love that they take this approach, though. I do, because I think sometimes, and I think around this team in particular, because it's so obvious to see what happened last year and our frustrations were just so again. I mean, we're just mad at JB. We spent the entire year mad at JB. We spent the entire offseason until they fired him, mad at JB. And then you're watching it all kind of pay off. And it's so easy for fans to look at and see what's different from last year to this year and then give the credit all to Atkinson. But at some point, you do have to credit some of these players.
No, but the thing is, this goes back to the single kudo theory. You don't have, there's not one kudo. There are many kudos to give around to this.
Well, and Shaq wants to give zero kudos.
Yeah, and I think that's, so you can give proper credit to Kenny Atkinson. Guys, they wouldn't be 13-0 without this offensive system. And they wouldn't have this offensive system if J.B. Bickerstaff was here.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about this with Jim Harbaugh, and we'll talk about Jim Harbaugh and quick hits coming up here because he's got a little bit of a thing I'm going to spring on you there. But the difference, I know football's not basketball, I get it. In football, I feel like we weigh the head coaches in football way differently than we do in both baseball and basketball. I don't know, at least in me, my perception of them is they're looked at like the second most important part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
And with Harbaugh, you can see in 1 year, they have the best defense in the NFL. Last year, they were absolute trash. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like we know they matter. We know they matter. They have to matter. How much does Atkinson actually matter, though?
Well, I would say, I'll ask you, are they 13-0 with J.B. Bickerstaff?
I think that's what we're seeing over the previous couple games. And something we talked about before the show. With the past three games, when they trailed by double digits in each one of these games, and in particular even last night, you know, we talked about the third quarter, and they weren't as good in the third quarter and all this other nonsense. That was their best quarter last night. They erased a big-time deficit. Do they win those games with JB? I don't think they do.
Well, and that's the games that infuriated us the most. Like, this team still is. And again, I don't know if it's they're playing down to their opponents the last three or four games. But since the Golden State win, the Nets game, that wasn't your best basketball. The Bulls game, that wasn't the best basketball. You had to come back in that game. Last night's game, you had to erase another deficit,
yep.
And Donovan had to take over the game. And by the way, it doesn't matter because you're winning. So we're having our cake and eat it too. You're not playing your best basketball because your best basketball probably was the first nine games of this 13-game win streak. And you're also managing a way to still win.
I don't know why this is. Like we watched them in recent years, they're 5-5 in their most recent 10 against Boston. Like, we watched them play against really good teams. I felt like they had this problem last year, too. Now, they're getting the wins this year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a direct reflection of Atkinson. But why is it this team does seem like they play down to the competition?
I think that's a sign. I think that a lot of good teams in the NBA do that. I think you get up for the big games. And when I say get up, I mean, you know, like, I think back to the first Milwaukee game. Both teams were playing like it was game 7 NBA Finals, and it was October.
It's easy to sleepwalk game 37 against the Grizzlies. It just is.
Well, and so I think that's part of it, and I think it's just NBA culture. I just don't think teams play 82 games as hard and as dominant as they did. Like, if you go back and look at like the 96 Vancouver Grizzlies, they played really hard. They just sucked.
I know, but it's one thing we always credited this Cavs team with, the gym class heroes that they are, where they always play hard. They're always, it doesn't feel like they, what I love about this Cavs team, I think what a lot of people love about this Cavs team, Nick, is that they're not like other teams in the NBA, and that they do constantly seem like they, every game matters an absolute ton to them.
So here's the alternate theory. Because again, playing down just means you aren't playing your best basketball team, and you happen to do that against three straight teams that aren't good. Or aren't in your stratosphere, right?
Yeah.
The other thing is, they by the time they play on Friday, that's 14 games in 24 days.
They played a lot. It's been this every other night thing, which is actually really convenient for watching these games.
Yeah, it's very easy to keep track of it. That's a really good point.
I don't have to think about it. Yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, they played last night. They're not going to play tonight. They'll play tomorrow.
But like, the only other team that has played that much basketball in that amount of time is the Spurs. So everybody else doesn't have to play roughly every other night, or I'm trying to think the math on that. I'm not going to do that on air. I already sound dumb enough. But I do think that's a point. Like, I think there's I want to say a little weariness there because it's been a lot of basketball in a short amount of time. And by the way, it's the most human thing that we see in the NBA all the time, in that you get on a winning streak and little things pop up. And that doesn't mean they're not playing hard, but it's just the little things of playing when everything's going right. And we saw this with the Guardians, where just, hey, that basket normally doesn't fall in, and you got that on that game because that's just the way things have been going for you.
Yeah.
So I do think there's a modicum of luck. I do think that it's because, you know, you've had the good fortune of playing lesser teams here recently. I don't think that's a knock on it. Like, because you still do have a couple wins against teams with superstar talent or with good records. So, but I do think it's noteworthy. I think it's super noteworthy that if you look at the last,
I mean, Jared McCain looked like an all-star last night.
Well, you can say that you can pick something out in each of the last three games. You had a stat that you looked up about.
Yeah, so I did last four and I did last three. Last four would include the Warriors game. Last three is the games they're kind of really focusing on. So I went back and took the last three. They're 10th in the NBA in offense and they're 11th in the NBA in defensive rating. Like they are not playing the same way where for the first eight games we're like, oh, they're legitimately making a run at the best offense in NBA history while also being top five defensively.
And maybe that matters if you start to drop some of these games. But this to me is a Cavs observation and not a critique. Because you're winning when you weren't playing your best basketball. That's not what you've done the last 2 years. And I think that's really interesting. And again, is that Atkinson, is that JB, or is that team just being put in a situation or in a context that it's not as all or nothing with, well, Donovan's got to be Donovan for four quarters. Like, okay, is it because Darius is healthy?
Yeah.
Is it because Evan is maybe more upfront in terms of how you run things through him? I don't know. I mean, I think I know. I think you got to give some of this credit to Kenny, some of it to the players, and some maybe to somewhere else in the organization. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a noteworthy sign when you're not playing your best basketball in this stretch, and you're still being able to advance to 13-0.
Yeah, I would just wonder if we would have had the 76ers at full strength last night, we couldn't have played the game we played.
No. And again, that would have been a great telltale sign of if they went out there and blew the doors off the Sixers for 48 minutes and put something up there closer to Golden State. Well, okay, maybe they did play down to them. But it could be, like, I tend to think the thing that annoys me in sports talk is we drill it down to one thing. It's this only thing. I think it's probably a little bit of, you know, it's the Nets, you can get away with it. No Embiid, there's no George, you can get away with it. I think some of it is you're just dog-ass tired. I think some of it is just the general way the NBA works out. But it should be noted, because when things are good, and I noticed this with the Guardians this year, I've noticed this with the Browns before, that when things are good, there's just, hey, they won. That's not, and especially in the NBA, especially in baseball, where there's 82 games and 162 games in the regular season.
Yeah, yeah.
We are still looking for trends. And so
it's not a bad thing, Nick, to then afterwards be like, well, did you win a game and did you look good doing it?
Yeah.
Like, we have to figure these things out, do we not? Like,
yeah, I mean, at some point.
I'm with you. It always bothers me when I hate it with Browns games more so than anything. It's like, well, did you win the game? Oh, you won the game. Okay, that's all that matters. It's like, well, sometimes you got to look a little bit deeper. This is why we talk about the playoffs all the time. It's like, do you enter the playoffs as a team that's a serious team? Or do you enter the playoffs as a team that won a lot of games, but no one took you seriously in the process?
Well, but I think that's always the push and pull of every conversation we have in the NBA, which is how well they're playing versus if they're winning. And the reality is, it's not like a point A and point B, and they're the polar opposites.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW. The ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
There's the two points, and then there's everything in between. And initially, at the start of the season, the Cavs were playing great and winning every game. And now they're winning every game, and they're playing really okay. Like 10th and 11th in the NBA in offense and defense.
Oh, it's fine.
There's nothing to sniff at.
You were also down at the half to Caleb Martin and Jared McCain. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I do think we can, I think it's okay as a Cavs fan to sit back and say, past couple games haven't gone great. The win streak we love, they're playing good basketball, but it's not as perfect as it was, let's say, even 5 days ago.
And it shouldn't surprise you if at one of these points, like the Bulls game on Friday, with the NBA Cup on the line. No, not a cup date. Don't do it, Mac. Not
Mac,
a cup date.
Mac, don't do that cup
not
date.
Not a cup date.
Don't do that cup date, Mac. Mac's not going to do the cup. We're yelling at him to not do the cup date, and he's not going to actually do the cup date.
I don't think he understood that when we say don't do the cup date, that's actually a way of us. But, you know, whether it's the NBA Cup
on
Friday.
We're just intentionally confusing.
All right, no, I was going to compare him to Mongo.
I always made a joke.
I was going to compare him to Mongo.
Let's compare
and then
him
I was
to the
like,
family dog. Let's do that.
Yeah, no, that's...
That's going to go great.
Does Dad want me to sit or stay? Does Dad want me? There we go.
The chase for the NBA Cup is on, and your Cavaliers are angling for their first NBA Cup championship.
I mean, we got the first
Nick
Donnie, bro.
And have all the latest on the Cavs' midseason pursuit of greatness. Here's the Afternoon Drive Cup Date.
Only took 40 seconds. No, I mean, we got a clear Donnybrook on our hands on Friday. And it should just be noted, Cavs Bull, the first Cavs Bulls, there's more of them. There's a couple of them. But it should be noted that I think that is going to be a game where you're because of the cup implications and the way the Cavs are playing, that adds some intrigue to this game, and again...
Well, and from an actual basketball point, if I can make one of those here, the amount that you win these games matters in the cup.
Are you saying
point
that...
Point differential is a big deal in the cup.
You're saying the cup date isn't an actual basketball point?
No, I'm saying I think like for the previous 20 minutes, I don't know that I'm at a salient basketball point. I'd like to contribute maybe one to the convo.
What do you guys make of the Cavs not playing their best basketball in the last couple games here? I think it's probably two or three things together. Quick hits with myself and JP next on 92.3 The Fan. Brian Baldinger joins Afternoon Drive coming up in just about 40 minutes here. We'll talk about the talent with the Cleveland Browns, where they're at as we come off the bye going to this New Orleans game. More on that Browns-Saints game. I know you're ready for it, including the conversation about the quarterback going forward that I think we've kind of all been skimping on because it might be a little depressing, but let's get to quick hits. JP, why don't you lead us off?
We're starting off in Baltimore. Lamar Jackson getting ready to take on the Steelers. One of the matchups of the weekend. He spoke to the media as he addressed the fact that Lamar can't seem to get the job done against the Pittsburgh team. 1-3 lifetime against the Steelers. Here we go.
I don't know what it is, man. It's just that I believe that rival atmosphere. I believe last year we supposed to have them, but things just didn't go our way. You know, the football guys wasn't on our side, but it's a whole nother year. It's a new year. I'm looking forward to the game.
1-3. He's got 4 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. He's got 5 fumbles. He's completing 59% of his passes. Passer rating in the 60s. He's been sacked 20 times. Why does Lamar Jackson stink against Pittsburgh?
Is it a cop-out to say sample size? Is it?
It might be. In this instance, it might be. Because he's so great everywhere else.
Except in the playoffs. And Pittsburgh.
Fair. All right. Is it just a pressure thing? Do you think he just looks at it as a division, a rival game, and he knows Ravens fans get up for this one? Because I have not fact-checked the numbers, but I remember him being pretty good against the Browns.
Are you surprised?
He's also had some bad games against the Browns, too, now that I think about it.
I agree with that. It's been hit or miss, meaning it's been kind of all or nothing with that. I'm torn. I think some of it – I mean, 4 games – the guy's been the starting quarterback since the second half of 2018. He's missed a lot of these games because of when he's been injured. But yeah, I mean, I think Lamar's still in the I've got to prove it to the NFL at who I am phase of his career. Maybe this year is not that, but I think he's gone out in specific games and been like, I got to prove to them I can, you know, throw my way back into a win. I got to prove that I can win with my arm instead of my legs. And that you can do that for most games. Some games you just need to win the game the way it presents itself. And so I think that's part of that. By the way, Tomlin has bested Harbaugh. Tomlin's got the 20-15 edge, so this is kind of part of more Pittsburgh not dominating, but having the edge over Baltimore.
Good memory from yesterday. This is matchup number 36.
I'm the math guy. People remember that.
That's right.
Omaha!
Earlier this week, I said losing this Saints game is a fireable offense. Or something to it. Something that Ken Carmen has mentioned multiple times this week with the Morning Boys, including this morning's interview with the Morning Boys, right leading into the Mary Kay Cabot interview this morning.
The Browns play the New Orleans Saints coming up on Sunday. The afternoon show has said is a must-win or Kevin Stefanski has committed a fireable offense. They must beat the New Orleans Saints or Kevin Stefanski, he's as good as gone, according to the Afternoon Boys. Let's go to Mary Kay Cabot. Mary Kay, is this Kevin Stefanski's personal Super Bowl on Sunday? It is in New Orleans. They've hosted a lot of them.
So, one, you have not said that. I have said...
Why do we get grouped together like this?
I mean, I would like to think that you and I don't do that with them.
Can I start holding Ken accountable for things that Lima says? Is this how this works?
I mean, I heard that Lima's the reasonable one on the show, but I didn't know that included to proper attribution here. So, one, I never said it was a must-win game. That's not how I...
Yeah, we got to get you on the record with this.
My point is, in saying it's a fireable offense, that's just another way of saying it's a really bad loss. It's not a literal statement that if Kevin's defense, that I expect Kevin to get fired if you lose this game.
Did you say it in that way, that he could have taken it literally? Or did you, did you say fireable?
The bad thing is, I mean, I did say fireable.
Or did
fireable.
You say you want him to be fired? Do you expect him to be fired?
Well, no. I said it was a fireable offense, meaning this is not the kind of game you should lose coming off the bye with all the other things that are at play in this game.
Okay. Okay.
But I was not being literal. Now, in fairness, I just might not have made my point well enough.
Maybe you just got to say it. Just since I didn't mean it literally.
Because Ken, a few times, had said it in a way that I didn't intend it. And today it was just, I didn't mean a must win or Kevin is fired. I think, because again, that implies that I know that that's coming, and I don't think that's coming. I don't even know Kevin's going to get fired at the end of the season.
That is two different conversations in and of itself, too.
Yes. Yeah,
so, I don't think anybody thinks, even if he lost the game by a million, the Browns would be like, all right, you're now fired. That's not going to happen.
I just think it's a really bad look if you lose this game. And if you don't win this game, I don't think you're winning another game the rest of the season. And I think this is when if something does happen at the end of the season, maybe we look back and go, man, maybe you should have taken that New Orleans game coming out of the bye.
Omaha! All right, I think I fell in love with Jim Harbaugh. I love what's happening with the Chargers right now. The defense has been on a different level. They are leading the league in scoring defense. The Chargers and Harbaugh are allowing 13.1 points per game this year. That's the fewest allowed by a team with a first-year coach since the 2011 49ers Jim Harbaugh-led team. He's incredible, and I love this back and forth between him and his quarterback, courtesy of NFL Films.
I think we should just run it.
100%.
I'm just pretending like I'm drawing a pass here. Hey, pretend like you're throwing a pass here.
Well, backside.
Yes.
I mean, I could.
Yes. Or the other side.
Or the other side. Both sides.
And they're going to go empty. Herbert rolling to the right. And here he goes, Herbert, into the end zone.
That's a beast. Beast mode, baby. MAGA!
Did he have MAGA?
I don't know. I don't think that's
My
what
guy.
That was.
Okay.
My guy.
All right. Just saying this would be the week to yell it.
It's that authenticity, though. I love Harbaugh. He's one of a kind. And it's moments like that that you see how he can get along with Herbert, and you see how it can work, and you can see why he has success everywhere he's been.
How I Met Your Mother had the crazy hot scale.
Yeah.
This is the coaching equivalent of the crazy hot scale. Of like, this dude is a goober, and this dude is amazing. He walks that line so thoroughly that I catch me on any given day. And it's so much easier to like him now that he's out of that other place.
If you're not winning, you're just Nick Sirianni. Like, we just laugh at you. That's all it is.
Omaha!
Longtime NBA center DeMarcus Cousins says on the Run It Back podcast that two-minute fight sessions during games could boost NBA ratings. Is this the smartest or dumbest idea ever?
There's no gloves. It's too bare knuckle for me, if I'm being honest about it.
That's where you draw the line.
That's where I draw the line. If you gave them some of the really like the laughably inflated boxing gloves, I'd maybe get on board with it.
I just love that DeMarcus was like, this is the one. This is going to get me on First Take. This one's going to get me. I'll replace Skip Bayless. Like, this is going to be my ticket to ride. Now, in hockey, I kind of could see it. I don't think there's enough fighting in hockey. I got some chippiness this weekend.
See, you're not
that
far away. Why do we allow it in one sport but not another sport?
Because it was ingrained in hockey for 60 years, and then Gary Bettman, like the clown he is, decided to take it out. No, it's called moderation. All right, it's like drinking. 20 beers, not great, Bob. 2 beers, pretty darn good.
I disagree. I like 20 beers.
I also like 20 beers. But again,
I'm going to side with the 20 beers
in this
one.
I cracked the door to get a little fighting in, and then we just let it all out there.
Omaha!
Wemby, a 50 burger. Victor Wembanyama, 50 points last night. And the chatter around it today is something we discussed earlier in the week, Nick. The idea that he actually did hit 50% of his threes. He was 8 for 16 in this game. He is still shooting a robust 23% from three-point land, though. It's not like he's lighting it up from the outside. 7'4". Should basically dominate anywhere within, 7 feet of the basket. And he's out there shooting threes. But last night he made a bunch of them.
It's like the greatest bit of it's actually the Evan theory on steroids of if he only makes 30% of those threes, he's lethal from the spacing standpoint. And yeah, it's nights like last night that aid the mythology. How the hell do you defend a guy that's 7'4"?
You can't, but that's why he should be within 7 feet of the basket always. But the game doesn't set up for that.
No, I mean, even on the perimeter. How do you do that?
Did you watch any of the highlights from last night? Did you see any of the... I saw like a montage put together of all 8 three-pointers. It's just an awkward-looking shot, even. Like, it just doesn't... It seems like it doesn't belong.
We got to get him, like, a guy to defend him on stilts. Red One, The Rock, and Chris Evans' new Christmas movie comes out tomorrow in theaters. The Rock recently sat down to promote the movie and admitted an Oscar favorite movie aided his excitement to see his film released.
I had an opportunity to go watch Oppenheimer, and I watched it in the IMAX theater where Christopher Nolan watches and screens his movies, him and Emma, his wife, and I even asked, let me sit where Chris is sitting. So they said, Chris sits here to enjoy the movie. So I sat where Chris sat. I watched Oppenheimer, it was amazing. And I was thinking, holy this thing, Red One, on this screen, with this technology, it's gonna be game over.
I think it took the wrong thing away from Oppenheimer. really? You're sitting, the peak narcissist is a movie about the father of the atomic bomb, whom the creation of which basically haunted him the rest of his life. And he was exiled, and he was called a socialist, and all this, and all The Rock can think of, man, my crappy Christmas movie is really going to spark on IMAX.
It's a classic Rock L. Has anybody taken more L's in the previous year than The Rock?
So you're saying this is Chotch and not Charming?
Definite Chotch, but I almost wonder if it's intentional. The Rock has swerved into not being everyone's favorite anymore. He loved being everyone's favorite in the past year. He just continues to do things that are so off his brand that I have to believe it's intentional.
Because again, he's been in the Bloodline feud. Is this all part of heel Rock or Hollywood
Rock? He's
doing
all of it. I don't know what he's doing. He's taking like a master class and just making yourself the most unlikable human while first being the most likable human ever.
I'm going to say it's Charming because it was really funny. I want to sit where Christopher Nolan sits.
Hey, we always say you at least want him to be authentic, right? That might have been very egotistical, but it was at least authentic.
I got to say, it was very authentic. It was unintentionally funny. And you know, the thing I love more than anything is when people are unintentionally funny. That is Quick Hits. When we come back, is it inevitable for the Browns at quarterback, or can it be done? 92.3 The Fan.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.